You're listening to Archer Radio.
This is Archer of ArcherRadio.com, the only ordinary queercast on the internet. Today's Wednesday, August 31st, 2005. The end of August is here. On today's show, I have a Skype conversation with David. He's one of my faithful listeners from, I think he's from Florida. And we talk about Hurricane Katrina, the response to Hurricane Katrina, how people are feeling. We also talk about the Cindy Sheehan vigil and that ending and Bush's response to the hurricane. I also have one last song from Monday Machuru, PodSafe Music, and I think that's all. So let's begin by listening to this Skype conversation with our faithful listener, David. Enjoy the conversation. So how are you?
Pretty good. It's rainy and very Florida here.
It's raining there?
Yeah, just light rain. Nothing compared to the horror in New Orleans.
Yeah, no kidding. I guess we had the remnants of Katrina pass through here last night, and we had a tornado a couple counties over from me.
That's true. And yeah, it did get it flooded all the way up.
It
cracked real near you.
But we actually didn't see any rain in my area. Nothing. Just some light wind and some, you know, dark clouds.
Well, it had a long ways to go, and I guess it drenched everybody in between. But
yeah, I think so. So what do you think about this hurricane devastation down there?
I don't think I really realized what it was going to. I mean, I knew what it could do, and I knew from here what it has done. You know, what a hurricane can do, but I guess it's because that city's under sea level and has all that water around it that's just made it so much worse, because now it's pouring in through those broken levees even though the storm is gone. So it's just amazing. It's like one big lake out there.
Exactly. I think they described it like a bowl. The water just can fill up and it's not going to go anywhere.
And the storm's gone, but the water level's rising, so all these poor people are just wandering around, not able to even lay down. I mean, they're just, can you imagine?
I know. It's kind of like a war zone. If you've seen movies and stuff, it's like these people are just walking around carrying what they, excuse me, what they own on their backs. It's just, it's so sad.
Oh, I know. I was just looking at the news a little while ago, and it's just, you know, the news guys are just standing there kind of dumbfounded because they can't do anything, and they're just trying to talk to these people, and what do you do? I mean, they're all wandering around. Some of them are living on overpasses to stay out of the water. And, they're all scared because there's no real law enforcement going on because there's no way to do it.
Yeah, that's actually what's scary to me. I can't imagine, you know, living down there. And I actually saw some tourists who were in a hotel, and the hotel, of course, had no water power. So they were trying to leave, but they're afraid because as soon as it turns dark, you know, there's the looters, there's the people who stole all those guns from the Walmart. It's just, it's scary.
Yeah, I mean, especially if people stealing guns. I mean, if you see somebody stealing some food, you at least figure they're doing it because they want to stay alive. But, well, somebody might have been doing the same thing with the guns. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to
Maybe
say.
I just, you know, one night, one day, and you can go from civilized to just crazy. It's just scary.
To chaos. And like we were saying, it's amazing how quickly people will turn from civilized to like survival mode.
Yeah, that bothers me.
It bothers me too. It's like I was saying, I can't imagine that happening in the area where I live, because everyone is just, you know, so civilized, I guess, when we have everything we need. But as soon as you don't have those things, your mind goes in a different direction, I guess.
Well, yeah, you really do go to survival mode, I guess. It kind of happened here because really there wasn't anything available for a while, but it quickly got restored because after the storm left, you didn't have this like they have, where the water's actually rising after the storm left them. You know, here it started getting better as the storm left and people could get out and start rebuilding, but Right. For a while there, you know, you wonder about, you know, if you can find something to eat after a few days when your food runs out, water.
Exactly. Now, to clarify for the listeners, you went through three hurricanes last year, right?
Yeah, there was a couple. One that came right over, another one came very close. It was enough to do damage, but it was not the head-on. And then another one that didn't come quite so close. But we got just torrential rain and winds from most of them, and then, of course, just the rain from the other one. And it all built up to the point where the last one that came through, and I can't remember their names at this point. All I remember is that it was within a six-week period, and we were all just really shell-shocked that everything was done. Because in the beginning, you look at those storms and you think, you don't realize what they're like, so you don't worry about them as much.
Right.
I grew up that way, you know. We knew the storms came through all the time, but they never came over us, so we just didn't worry about them.
Right.
Even Andrew, you know, we got a light rain here, and Andrew tore up the south end of the state.
Right.
But, man, after that, I'm skittish. If one comes anywhere near, I'm leaving.
I would be, too. I tell you, I wouldn't be anywhere near it. Now, the boyfriend's family is right in New Orleans. They live right in New Orleans. And his sister was able to evacuate, and his parents went to Baton Rouge, but he didn't hear from them for like 2 days. He didn't know if they had survived or what, and he still hasn't heard from one of his sisters and who stayed right in New Orleans, so it's kind of scary.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, New Orleans is not... I think the French Quarter is mostly spared from the damage, but I don't know if it's getting... the water's rising there and now or not, but...
Well, I think they were saying late this afternoon that the water in Lake Pontchartrain and the water in the city had leveled out, so there's like no more flow. It's just the same level.
Yeah, I guess that's good. You
know, yeah.
That also means they're flooded.
Right.
They tried to put everything you can think of in there to stop that break today, I think.
Oh, yeah. I saw them putting these 3,000-pound bags of sand in there, dropping them in there, and nothing was working.
No, they said it was just like dropping it into a black hole. And they were looking around to see if they could find a big barge to float in there and
help stop the flow, yeah.
it is a kind of amazing to me that they don't have... I mean, I realize it's a bad storm, but you'd think there would be some more planning for something that bad if you know that the city is in that kind of state. I mean, that it's under sea level and that this could happen.
Exactly, and I guess they just thought their levees were good enough to hold, but even on top of that, you would think, because they saw this storm coming pretty far out, and then within like 2 days or 3 days of it hitting New Orleans, they knew it was going to go into New Orleans, so I think there could have been some more delivery of supplies or help or whatever to the outlying states so that they could have a faster response moving stuff in. What do you think about the government's response so far?
Well, they, from what I've read, they tried to get a jump on it, but I don't think... Well, this is what I was just asking. Who is it that didn't realize this was going to be so bad? I mean, I can give them the benefit of the doubt and saying that this is really a bad storm in a bad place, but it's a place where this should have been foreseen. I read somewhere that the studies for the worst-case scenario of this type were defunded because I guess they didn't think it was a priority.
And probably because it had been so many years, like since 1969 for the last major storm there.
Right, Camille, yeah.
Yeah, so we're talking 30 years, 35, 36 years. So.
Which is when they built those pumps and levees to the point they were at now.
Right.
But I think they were only designed to withstand like Category 3.
Yeah, something like that.
Because 5 just doesn't hit that often.
No.
It was actually a 4, I guess, when it finally hit, but even 4 is not very common. So.
Right, and this was a very strong 4, so...
I guess there is something to be said for, you know, there are some catastrophes you're just not going to be able to totally plan for, but...
True.
It's always very frustrating, and I'm guilty of it, too. It's always very frustrating in the beginning of one of these things, because the first thing you want to do is get mad and you know, what you're really mad at is that you can't do anything about it.
Right.
You can't do anything to dissipate it. You know, you can watch it and track it, and you can pick out the pieces, but you want to be able to move these things or something.
Exactly, and you have no control over it.
No, it's just one of those things that, and it's not like a tornado that comes down virtually out of nowhere. You know, you watch it coming, and here it comes.
Exactly.
Don't do anything about it.
And I was listening to the director of FEMA on CNN, or was it MSNBC? And he was, you could tell the frustration in that guy's voice. I mean, he's just like, he knows. Go ahead.
These are very dedicated people, I'm sorry.
Yes, absolutely. You can, I mean, you can tell this guy, he wants to help, but he's frustrated because there's very few ways to get into the city because of all the flooding. So, and he can hear the news reports of the people saying, "Where's our help? Where's our help?" But there's only so many ways you can get in the city to help. So, I think.
Yeah.
And you can hear the people who are totally frustrated saying, "I need a place to live."
But it's the roads. I saw a big long interstate bridge that was just laid out in pieces all over the place. I mean, it's going to be a good year before that gets rebuilt.
Yeah, I think so.
And I don't think it's going to be. I think New Orleans is going to be in bad shape for well over a year. I mean, it's probably going to take a couple of years to get back to halfway normal.
The question is, though, where do these people live? I mean, I know that they're busing like 70,000 people to the Astrodome in Houston.
Yeah, the people on the Superdome now are going to the Astrodome. But that's, how much can you do in a facility that's meant to go in and watch a game and leave? It's not really designed for, the bathroom utilities and the,
right.
And the food. I mean, it just hasn't got the, it's got a roof. That's about it,
Yeah, it's not ideal, but I guess it's a good place to start.
Yeah, you're limited, and for that number of people.
Right.
But I think the population there is, 500,000?
Oh, I'm not sure. I have no idea.
If they're evacuating the entire thing, I don't know how many are left, but, in a city of 500,000, you're likely to have a good number of poorer people that really don't have the resources.
Oh, you mean the city of New Orleans? How many people there?
Yeah.
I think there's 1.3 million there with the city and the outlying suburbs.
Wow.
So, and a lot of people were already gone, but there's so many people who do not have the money or the means to get out. Those are the ones who are stuck there.
Yeah, I mean, they're shows on the TV now because other people are left.
Right.
I don't think it was because they didn't want to leave. I don't think they could leave.
Exactly. I mean, they had no choice.
I mean, what are you going to do? Go out on the road and run out of gas and sit on the side of the road? I mean, certain people just have no alternatives. And with 1.3 million people and the percentage of them that couldn't get out, that's a big job for any kind of relief agency.
Sure is.
I mean, it's going to be... It's not just the money. It's really, I guess, the physical, getting enough bodies in there to help people.
Right.
I knew of FEMA, one of the local directors here. He was a client of mine. And, man, they really do have a lot of passion for that stuff. It's they really take it as a calling. They really think that's something that is special, and it is.
Definitely. It's a lot of work, too, coordinating that and getting everybody in place and everything. Ugh.
Oh, it's almost a thankless job because, like, down here, there was the natural tendency for some people to scam them.
Right.
And because they were trying to get the money out as freely as possible, some of that money did go to the wrong places, and then they get attacked for giving out money to the wrong people.
Yep, they get attacked on both sides, people not getting money and people getting too much.
Yeah, and, with my own ears, I heard people around here scheming that stuff, and it made me just furious. I mean, they were actually talking about, well, you can get money if you claim this and that because of the hurricane. Lord.
It's like, what are these people thinking? Do they have no morals?
No conscience at all.
Yeah, conscience? They don't have a conscience. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think about Bush's... did you hear him talk this afternoon?
I have to say I did not. I'll probably see it on a rerun somewhere. But are you talking about the oil reserves? Or?
Yeah, how he's going to release some of the oil.
I believe it's a good idea.
But the way he's going to do it is he's going to lend oil to the refineries, and then they're going to have to eventually, you know, resupply the reserve.
Well, that's as I understand the way that whole system works. That's, in other words, the government never gives it to them; they just make it available to keep the supply going. In other words, the refineries would be buying the oil from somebody else,
right?
But since they can't get it, they're going to be not necessarily buying it, but just borrowing it from the government, because then when there's plenty again, you know, then they're going to give it back.
But exactly.
I don't think that's just this event. I think that's how that whole reserve system works.
But I don't think they've released oil from the reserve for a really long time.
Mm-mm. Clinton did it towards the end of the 90s. And I don't remember it. It helped a little bit. I think it'll help more this time because the problem is more localized. I think it's really more useful right now than it was then.
Yeah.
But it's really scary because the gas prices are so high already, and the fuel prices are, I mean, natural gas comes from there too, and even though we have plenty of natural gas, it's the price. Our electric plant gets fueled with that stuff, and they charge us for the difference between what the normal market level was and how much it costs to the adjustment. You know, they call it a fuel adjustment.
Right.
And that's like $80 a month now for the difference in price. You know, just $80 just for the fuel adjustment charge on top of a couple of bucks for power. And that's all because of the instability of it.
Yeah. Now, so what kind of car do you drive? Do you drive an SUV?
No. I drive a small Chrysler.
Good for you.
I don't know whether it's just the disgust of the waste or what. I don't know. But I just never liked the SUVs.
Well, I have a small SUV. It only gets about 18 miles to the gallon. But when I bought it 4 years ago, gas was like $1.25 or something like that.
Well, that's what a friend of mine was saying the other day. And, of course, he has a family, so I feel for him on the need for a larger car. But he said when he bought the thing, you know, gas was half what it is now. And he's just, you know, astounded at how much he's putting in the tank. So I don't know why we stopped the regulations on getting a better gas mileage. To be honest with you, I think it was Clinton that postponed those and it never got reenacted. But
why didn't they just have a thing coming out saying that they are going to reenact those?
Oh, they better.
Like by 2007, trucks and SUVs have to get like 18 miles to the gallon minimum, something like that.
Yeah, I believe I heard something. I don't know anything about the requirements, but you know, they were already doing pretty good when they postponed them. I think they did it because the economy and everything was going well. The prices were down. It's a typical American problem of, you know, everything's going well, so we won't think ahead. And we're just, you know, I think it's more of a open society problem, actually. Any place that's open and free and market-driven, if things are going well, we just don't think about it.
And that could be the same thing with this hurricane. Things are going so well, they hadn't had a big one.
Oh,
they
weren't
thinking.
No doubt. We are definitely a people that gets shocked into doing things. Otherwise, we'll just drag our feet and status quo. But
yeah,
we really have had 30-plus years to deal with this gas thing, and I've always been disgusted at how short-sighted both sides of the political spectrum have been equally short-sighted in this.
Absolutely.
I mean, we really should hold them accountable for what they've not done, but unfortunately, you can't undo it. You just have to make plans.
Right.
Pass legislation with tons of pork in it just so you can get a little bit of good stuff.
And they usually do that.
They just did it.
Well, then let's change the subject if you don't mind. And you tell me if you don't want to talk about this, but I heard today that Cindy Sheehan ended her vigil at the Crawford Ranch and is planning her bus tour up to D.C. by September 24th. Do you have any comment on that?
You mean that she's ending it? Or I'm sure she's ending it because Bush ended his vacation.
Right.
Are you talking about, do I have any comments on her in general? Or
yeah, yeah. Actually, yeah. Just what do you feel about that whole, her whole vigil?
I don't know enough. I don't know much about her personally, except, and of course, you know, that I'll probably say whatever I think here. But
and I think you should. I think you should say whatever you feel.
I'm being sincere about it because I just, I mean, the way I see it, I don't begrudge anyone their right to protest, speak their mind. I have had some discussions on Q-Potter about what's the best way to do that without negatively impacting the morale of the people that are in harm's way. I don't know, you know, but there's got to be a way that people can do that because people of good conscience do disagree and people of good conscience agree with what we're doing. I mean, it's just both sides have got to have a way of venting it and making their view known. As far as she's concerned, I don't see her as a saint. I mean, I see her as someone who probably started out very grieving. And I think now it's morphed into an awful lot of different things. I'm sure there are a lot of people that are with her that are sincere, and there's a lot of other ones that are pretty lousy.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, I think they're using that opportunity to get their face in the news.
And see, I was going to say the exact same thing. I think people saw her mission or whatever as a way for themselves to, like, latch on to a cause when really maybe they do feel the same way, but it's interesting how that so many people just, like, have to run down there and get themselves associated with that just so they can be seen and heard.
Yeah, it's, if you look at the pictures of down there, everybody's craning their necks and wanting to get in there and give her a hug just so they can get in front of a camera.
Right.
And you know, she wants to go and sit in front of the president's house or the White House or whatever else, you know, as long as she's doing it peacefully and speaking her mind, you know, more power to her. I just get really sick of people using other people for their own purposes, and I think that's what's happening a lot with her. There's a core of people that I think really believe what she's saying is the best thing and that we should, you know, leave there and et cetera. And so those people are, I'm sure, sincere.
Right.
But that group of people, everyone from, you know, the most disgusting white supremacists and such that are, I don't know where in the world they're coming out of this work on. I don't know. I'm sure she doesn't want them around her. But
no, I'm sure she doesn't either.
But you know what? You haven't got much control of it. Once it becomes gets to that stage, it has a life of its own. And I'm sure she doesn't really have a lot of say over some things now. And
no.
I think she probably, and I'm putting words in her mouth, but she probably wishes that some of them would just go home and the other ones would, you know, stick around. But,
well, I wondered if she actually felt that way too. That, you know, people get to a certain point where it's taken over by larger groups and you really have no more control over it, and I would be like, well, I'm done, you know, I've said my piece, I'm done, you all can move on, but I'm done. You know, again, I don't want to put words in her mouth either, but I would guess that at some point she's got to say, you know, I'm done, I've made my point.
Well, she has a, you know, her mom's very ill, and I think is her husband divorcing her, or is she,
I heard that
problems on the home front, and I'm sure that it's got to be weighing on her. And she shouldn't feel like if she leaves there and doesn't continue to devote her entire life to sitting in front of those cameras that she's not done what she feels is right. But I just think it's exploitation in many ways, and I don't like seeing it, but, you know, good luck getting it off there.
Exactly. But as you've said before, you agree that everyone should have their ability or the right to say what they want to say.
Oh, good grief, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the extremes that disagree with those things. And I don't like it that it seems as though everyone who is in one camp makes it look as though the other camp doesn't want them to say anything.
Right.
I mean, again, those people exist, but those are on the fringes of both sides. And most Americans, I believe, they think it's perfectly fine. It is, in fact, really laudable to make your views known. And somebody that actually puts action behind their beliefs, I think, is doing a good thing. I mean, it's doing more than I do in many cases.
I would agree with that, because I agree that I talk a lot, but I don't do a whole lot. Well, although I did donate to the Red Cross yesterday.
Yeah, no, and I heard you mention the Red Cross, and that was a good idea. In fact, you prompted me to put that down on my list to go over there. And that's a very good thing because, you know, that wouldn't have come to mind when I first saw that. I would have just been grief-stricken and what can I do? And it's strangely enough, you just don't think about those things in a tragedy. And so it's good you say that. Yeah. And I've heard, I think, one other podcaster mention that. But surprisingly enough, there's been very little talk about this.
You know, I was actually surprised about that, too, because as you probably know, I listen to about 8 to 10 podcasts a day, and there was only one other mention about the whole hurricane thing today.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not listening to the right podcast, I don't know, but there was one other mention about the whole Hurricane Katrina, and I think it's a major issue. You know, and if, you know, people talk about using podcasting to, you know, get the word out or whatever, and this would be a great way to talk about it, and... Like I said, I only heard it one other time.
I posted something on Q-Potter finally because, although I restrained myself from posting much over there right now.
Yeah.
But
I'm with you on that.
I had to ask, you know, is anybody who's been around, you know, because that's a group of people, and I figure, you know, we want to know if any of those people are affected or missing or, you know.
Yeah, I actually read that post. But I was a little afraid to leave a message there.
Well, because it's my post?
No, not because of that. Just because you know how it is. You say something and people will do something else with what you say.
Oh, read into it. Well, honestly, all it was is, you know, hey, has anybody heard anything from anybody? Because I figure with a group that's as large, and that Q-Potter membership seems to be fairly decent.
Yeah, it is.
A decent size, anyway. I would think somebody is somewhere near New Orleans. And maybe even there, and can't get out, you know, can't speak.
Right.
So I just thought, you know, is anybody talking about it? The only thing I saw was on one blog, one person's blog, they brought up that inane question about, you know, well, why are we paying for them to save them when they knew that they were living in a bowl, you know?
And that was just plain stupidity.
Oh, that's just stupid. I mean, that's no compassion whatsoever. I mean, every place in the country has a risk, and yes, if you're living out on an island in the middle of the ocean and they have to build it up every year because it's eroding away, then yeah, I can see why wouldn't you move, because you probably have to pay $500,000 to stay there anyway. But those people in Louisiana, I mean, you take a good look at that and tell me if those people are affluent enough to be able to just wander over to another part of the country that's a little safer.
Exactly. They don't have the means.
No, they don't have the means to get out now.
Right.
I mean, if it was ever a time to head out, you know, but they're probably their entire family there. It's a whole culture there. The Cajun culture there is...
Yes, I know. The boyfriend is part of it. And I was wondering if, you know, reading your post on Q-Potter, I didn't even see anybody respond in terms of saying that they had family there or friends there or anything like that.
No, and either that's just the way it is or I don't know.
Well, I know that Mike Hipp's boyfriend has family there, and he's from there. And, of course, my boyfriend, and it sounds like you have some friends there.
And I have a relative there we haven't been able to get a hold of. Not there, but in Gulf Shores, which is close.
Right, yeah. Wow.
So I don't know. Maybe no one knew anybody to say anything about it, you know. But I just thought I'd see a little more camaraderie on there about, you know, can we help somebody?
You would think. But as I said yesterday on my show, that unless you know somebody there, it affects you differently or impacts you differently, and maybe nobody else knows anybody there, and they're not even thinking about it. I don't know.
It could be. When you turn on the television, it's hard to get away from it right now. So
exactly.
But if you don't have someone personally involved, then yeah, it's more of a just a news item, I guess. Although, gosh, it is such a horrendous thing. It's hard to think of anyone that wouldn't be moved by it.
But I know.
I'm sure someone will just compare it to other places in the country or in the world that are in bad shape. And why are we complaining? You know, there's always somebody out there that has to make that contrarian statement like that.
I know, and those are the people who just don't get it. So.
I'm glad your boyfriend's family is okay.
Thanks, and hopefully I'll hear from him about his sister he hasn't heard from. But anyway, Well, listen, I appreciate the conversation. It's kind of therapeutic to talk with someone about it because I haven't really been talking to anybody the last couple of days.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So well, I appreciate it.
I'm sure someone will find it boring.
And you know what? That's fine.
But we enjoyed it, so okay.
Exactly. And, you know, as I said, that this is a hobby for me. It's not a career. This is
no,
for fun.
I think you do a good job of it. I still think you reflect what most of our lives are.
Thank you.
Pretty normal stuff that you have to deal with day in and day out.
True.
And most of us don't have the kind of drama that might lead us into those weird places that are not boring.
Right. Well, anyway, I appreciate that. That was very nice of you. And thank you so much for the call and the conversation.
Yep.
Okay, well, go ahead.
I said take care.
Okay, you take care too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with David. We had David on the show, I guess, about a month ago or so, and I enjoyed that conversation, so hopefully you did too. Thank you, David, for being my guest today. I appreciate that. Now, I have some PodSafe music to listen to. It's the last song I have from Monday Machuru. It's called To Be, and it's actually a remix, so hopefully you will enjoy that song. And, of course, I will have a link on the show notes to her website. And I think after that song, I will just end the show. So thank you for listening. Send me some emails. Send me some comments. Haven't got any voicemail in a while. So thanks. And now let's have the song To Be by Monday Machuru.
been listening to Archer Radio.